Good morning, everyone. So I'm Kamala Rampasada Silva, Chief Executive Officer of the Caribbean Corporate Governance Institute. And it is my absolute pleasure to welcome you to today's session, which is entitled Dealing with Difficult Boards, Leadership Challenges During COVID-19. Today's session has attracted yet another large turnout as we continue with our online sessions, which began 2 months ago. So let me take this opportunity to welcome all of you who are new to us here at the Caribbean Corporate Governance Institute. Many of you know that CCGI is incorporated as a not-for-profit membership organization. We've been in existence since 2012. Taking a lead on advocacy for improved board performance, especially during this COVID-19 crisis, is very much in alignment with our purpose to help our corporate governance landscape improve in our region. A difficult board in particular impacts everyone in an organization. The uncertainty of the environment during COVID-19 means that strategies need to be flexible so as to change midstream. How then do you deal if you are a senior member in an organization or a board member, and you have to navigate in that time, and your board is either uninterested or some members may be very successful during stable times, but find it very difficult to function and thrive during uncertainty. So our leadership coach, who is on this morning, Sophia Noel, takes on this challenge of explaining what makes a difficult board, and what are the leadership lessons that can enable us to better manage in these difficult times. Though board members have an equal vote, not all board members are the same in their understanding or interest in the organization. So how do you lead then with difficult board members? Remember that senior managers who are not on the board can also find themselves frustrated because the board does not understand the changing environment, how it impacts the organization internally, and therefore the need to approve changed strategies. Or at times, the board may insist on a course of action which the management team thinks may lead to further chaos and disruption in the organization. How then do you lead with such boards? So before we go to Sophia and what I'm sure would be an excellent presentation today, I would like to make a few housekeeping announcements. We would like everyone to remain on mute during Sophia's presentation, which would last about 30 seconds. When she's finished, there's an icon at the bottom of your screen to raise your hands when you want to get our attention. You will need to unmute yourself and then press the mute icon again when you are done so as to minimize disruptive noises. You may also make comments or ask questions in the chat feature during the session, which may be read out afterwards. Our technical support for today's session is provided by Christy Johnsler Crouch from SmartServe Limited. So those of you who would like to get online technical support for your Zoom meetings, you may contact Christy. She does an excellent job with these meetings. Note too that this meeting is being recorded and that the recording will be sent to you afterwards by Christy. She will also ensure the recording is available on the CCGI website and available to our members. There's one more thing I'd like to share before handing over to our presentation, and that is we recognize the financial challenges that many have been facing as a result of the temporary closure of non-essential businesses. As a result, the CCGI took a decision to offer a six-month moratorium on membership fees for those members whose renewal has come up during this period. We are also looking to extend this offer to new members who wish to join us in our quest to improve corporate governance practices. So look forward to an email from us or reach out to us if you're interested in joining the Caribbean Corporate Governance Institute. Just before we hand over to Sophia, though, I would like to ask our chairman, our expert moderator, whenever we have our panel discussions, and someone who I truly appreciate as the chairman of our board, because we do not have a difficult board. Nigel Romano, thank you so much for your leadership. And I ask you to say a few opening remarks before we hand over to Sophia.
Thank you very much, Kamala. Your passion makes it a lot easier to lead. So thank you for that. I'm really looking forward to Sophia's guidance here today, because I am one who is committed to not interfering. And I think for me, as a in my board experience, the critical thing is to choose the right people and then get out of their way and provide support as they need it. Not to micromanage, and to understand that the board is there to guide, not to execute. So Sophia, I'm not going to say much more. I am looking forward to your words of wisdom. Thank you very much for agreeing to do this. Over to you.
Thank you so much, Nigel and Kamala. Thank you for the opportunity, and good morning to everyone. This is going to be an exciting session, and Nigel hit some of the key things even already. What I will want to do, let me just share my screen even as I just say a little bit about myself. So as you would have heard, my name is Safia Noel, and let me just make sure that it's on. And I am the director of Safia Group, right, which is a leadership development agency, and we work with all kinds of leaders, organizational, non-organizational leaders. And really our goal is to stimulate and support growth in leaders, because many times persons are in leadership positions and they were not prepared, they don't have the tools, and so sometimes they make a mess of it. And so we're really here to provide that support to stimulate the growth, as I said, and also as they carry out their responsibilities to be that bolster for them. So I'm a chartered accountant by profession, my base qualification, and then I went on to do my master's in management with a focus on leadership. I'm particularly in love with leadership and the impact it has on almost any environment. You want to change an environment, you change the leader, all right? Leadership is very, very critical. And I also have quite a number of years blended experience across varying industries. I think I would have served at almost every level in organizations as an executive, as well as a board member, both in private and the public sector. My most recent executive stint was at Children's Authority, where I was the chief executive there, really forging this new organization and its path as it set up. And that was a very interesting experience. I was hearing the earlier conversation between Kamala and another person about state boards and governance within that environment, and that has its own peculiarities. And so I'm also very much familiar with that environment. I mean, at the end of the day, I just absolutely love to see people grow and develop and to reach their full potential. So even as we get started, let me hasten to say that this is not a board bashing session in any way. So there's no benefit to such a session. What we are hoping to do is to have a candid discussion about some of the challenges that the boards face and executives face in treating with boards, and really how we can make that experience better. How can we improve effectiveness between this board executive relationship? All right, so let's get started. Just a very quick outline. In terms of what we're going to cover today, we are going to touch on the board executive relationship, what I generally call the governance operational framework, how that works. Some persons may be very familiar with it, but I think it's important for us to go through it again. What causes the difficulty in that environment? And then we're going to talk about the goal of synchronization and then the next steps. All right. So the governance and operational framework, board versus management. That's how it feels a lot of times. We have this saying here from Mr. Barry S. Bader, who is a governance consultant. He wrote an article back in 2008. And I took this statement out of the article, which I found sums up sometimes what is the challenge. Effective boards understand the difference between governing and managing. Dysfunctional boards do not. And this is very true. It's a loaded statement, but it's a very, very true statement. The board's effectiveness lies in understanding its role. All right, and particularly the board chairman, because the chairman of the board is responsible for the smooth functioning of the board. And so the board chairman is able to guide discussions, bring persons back when they're going off. But when it is the chairman of the board doesn't understand this dichotomy, there is a challenge. Now, understanding and accepting the difference, because some persons may understand, but they may not accept it, all right? Very, very important. And when it comes to boards and executives, it is even more critical for the board to understand it more so than the executive, and I'll tell you why. The executives, by nature, they will manage, all right? Though some executives need to learn to manage, and that is why Nigel said, and I fully agree, you need to choose the right person and then get out of their way. If it is you do not choose the right person, then you may find yourself always being drawn into operational matters. All right? But you find it is the board who many times encroach on the executive turf or into management or into operations more than you find executives encroaching into governance. And also, because boards have the higher positional power, you may find when it is they become frustrated, they just resort to using that power or misusing it to get their way, when really their way may not have been right to start with. And so it is important, especially for board members, especially for chairmen, to really understand the difference between governing and managing, because therein lies the root of you being successful in your position. Now, dysfunction on the other side is an inevitability if there is no understanding of this difference. And it may be hard, but it is truth. And let me hasten to say that, you know, and I say it often when I treat with toxic leadership, which is a type of leadership that is practiced. And many times toxic leaders do not know that they are toxic. But if it is you were to examine their environment, examine their output, examine what happens when they introduce themselves into an environment, you would be able to see very quickly that they are in fact toxic. Toxic leaders do not intend to be toxic. Nobody sets out to be a toxic leader. And I think it's the same thing with a dysfunctional board. No board or no chairman sets out to be dysfunctional. It really is a byproduct of ignorance, a byproduct and sometimes of sincere ignorance. And so it is important, it is very, very important that board members seek to get the correct information. Do not, and I will tell you this, you know, there's this saying, the man who doesn't even know that he doesn't know, but then operates as if he know, as if he knows, is a very dangerous man. And so sometimes as a board member, not because you sit in the position of the board means that you're the holder of all information. It is important that you get the right information so that you can be effective. So attending sessions like these, CCGI, I mean, they put out so many different programs even before this COVID-19 situation. So you want to put yourself in a position and a posture of learning, a posture of getting good, solid information from professionals who know, who experience and can guide you. So whichever way you choose to do it, get the right information. I mean, even with my organization, I offer coaching sessions, and it's particularly useful for chairmen and CEOs, because sometimes they don't want to come in the open to show that they do not know. And so you come in a more private, closed session to get the guidance. However you choose to do it, get the information that you need to be effective. Do not rely on your positional power to say that will get you through. What will happen is that you will cripple the organization. All right, so we want to ensure that we understand. So let's talk a little bit about this difference. So I just want to talk firstly about the matters for the board, governance matters. And just sticking with the work that Mr. Bader did, if it is you are to determine if this matters legitimately for the board, you need to ask yourself these 7 questions. First question, is it big? Is it a big matter? And what you're trying to determine with this big matter is it worth the board's time? because not everything should get the board's time and attention. And the rule of thumb is if it impacts 10% or more of the organization's income stream or activities, then it warrants some attention by the board. So if it is your income for the year, perhaps let's just say it's $100 million, anything under $10 million, you don't need to be micromanaging every single decision, but you'd want to be reported to. That's something separate, but we're talking about intervening, getting involved. If it's big, then. If it's not big, forget it. Forget it. You know, and I remember telling one board member at a time when I worked in a state agency, I said, if the board fees are any guidance on how much time is required from you, you would recognize it's not that much time. All right? Executives are paid more than board members because they are the ones on the ground to get the work done. Board members are supposed to be in and out providing guidance, being an organ of appeal, given that directive kind of hand. Other than that, it's not supposed to take up a whole lot of your time. If it's taking up too much of your time, perhaps you're getting too involved. All right? Another part of it. Is it about the future? Because boards, akin to what a board does, is guidance. Very, very important. A board should be looking 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road. A board not supposed to be looking at what's supposed to happen next month. That should already been covered in a strategic plan or covered in a previous session. All right? And the rule of thumb here is, if a board approves the strategic plan, I mean, I could pause there, that in itself could be a challenge because some boards struggle to even get their strategic plans approved. And let me just quickly say, if a board does not approve a strategic plan, it is compromising its control structure. The strategic plan is what you give the CEO to execute. That is what you're going to match the CEO's performance against and the performance of the organization. If you do not set that out from the word go, you are going to find it difficult to control what happens in the organization and to steer the organization. So you want to ensure you approve your strategic plans, review it, make sure you approve it. But if that strat plan has more than 5 or 6 strategic areas with more than 20 strategic initiatives under that, it's probably drilling down too low. All right? You do not want to get too deep. I'll give you just, a regular example. Let's just say we're in Trinidad and Tobago, because I know there may be people in some different countries, different islands here. I'm not certain. But let's just say we're in Trinidad and we're in Port of Spain. The board determines, you see, by the third quarter of 2020, we need to be in San Fernando. It is up, that is all the CEO needs to know. It is the CEO to determine whether they're going to fly, whether they're going to walk, whether they're going to drive. They just need to make sure that they get to San Fernando by the third quarter. And the third quarter is from July to September, anywhere within there. There's no need to pin down a date. All right? And you leave that to run. You leave the CEO to get their work done with their team. If it is they do not get there in time, then you can say, why did this not happen? And, you know, I'm leaving out a number of steps where they should be reporting in between that period to talk about the progress and all of that. But this is an example to show you do not want to get too detailed. You do not want to go beyond what you're supposed to. Because when you do that, you actually do the CEO's work for them. All right? You don't want to do that. All right? Another thing, is it core to the mission of the organization? The board is the guardian of the mission of the organization. And that mission, you find it in your mission statement. So you have the vision and then you have the mission statement, just how you're going to, you know, accomplish this vision. We're not talking about small missions. We're talking about that wide organizational mission. The board guards that. And so anything that impacts that, the board is supposed to be aware. And the board, based on well thought out, well documented analyses and recommendations by the executive, must strike the right balance between the mission and financial realities, because you may set out to do something in a particular fashion, but the financial realities prevent you from doing so. That is a matter for the board. And again, I'm referring to the mission statement, that big, broad mission, which is how the organization intends to go about achieving its vision. Another question. Is a high-level policy decision needed to resolve a situation? And a high-level policy decision is not an operational policy. A high-level policy has to do with impact, major impact on the organization. Or it requires compliance with some law or regulation, or it impacts how the board functions or how management functions. The board does not set policy for every single layer of the organization. Let me give you an example or a parallel. You know, sometimes we have parent law. And let me even drill down even further. If it is you have, let's just say, the Dangerous Dog Act. If it is the dog damages someone, you have a fine to pay within 3 months. Parent Act says that. Then you have regulations that seek to give details in how you operationalize that piece of law. So they would set out how you determine if it was that specific dog who attacked the person and caused the damage, determine how much the fine is supposed to be. But then let's say the regulation says, okay, if it is the fine you have to pay it within 3 months. But if it is you do not meet that deadline, you will be afforded an extension of 3 months. You see that extension of 3 months? That is outside the Parent Act. That is giving itself more power than was given by the governing body. So the board sets high-level policy, which gives the four corners within which executives operate. Executives can set operational policy, but it has to be within the four corners provided by the high-level policy. It cannot give itself more discretion or more power than the policy that the board approved gives it. All right, and that is why it's important for boards to set high-level policies. When there are no policies, there is very little way to control the executive. Again, you will start to impair your control framework. All right, high-level policies are very, very important. Another question to ask yourself, is a red flag flying? Is there a red flag? Boards supposed to become concerned when they see red flags. Red flags concerning performance, red flags concerning quality, all right, and other key elements of the organization's operation. But how do you determine if it's something that the board's supposed to get involved? The rule of thumb is, if there is a statistically significant, and again, statistically significant, so if it's, you know, a 0.2%, that's not statistically significant. So a statistically significant over or under performance over 3 consecutive reporting periods, the board ought to become concerned. Or let's just say something unethical or illegal occurred, or it's dramatic underperformance, you know, income fell by 30%. That is significant and warrants the attention by the board. COVID-19, boards had to become active. Boards who stayed absent or silent during this period did not respond effectively, because this would have represented a major red flag for a lot of organizations. All right? Now, when you determine the red flag and you determine that you should get involved, that involvement is not to produce solutions. The involvement is to ensure that a solution is being had. So you give the executive the opportunity to produce the results, but all they need to know is that you are watching, you are monitoring, and you want to know that it is being treated with. It doesn't mean you have to roll up your sleeve and get in there and actually do it. But it means that you need to be concerned enough to say, hey, this is happening here. What are you doing about it? And when you're going to do something about it by? All right? Another question to ask yourself. Is a watchdog watching? All right, this is very important. If the government, the police, any statutory body, BIR, NIS, any of those bodies are interested in the organization, at least from a high level perspective, the board should also be interested. Any high profile issues, the board should be interested. All right, very, very important. If a watchdog is watching, you also want to know what is happening here, because if any of those sanctions are levied against the organization, again, it can be very crippling. So you want to get in there from early and understand what is happening. And lastly, does the CEO want or need the board's support? Very, very, very important. A CEO will come to the board to ask, sometimes it might be for guidance, intervention, support on various matters. And so it is very important that the board responds to requests by the CEO for its support. An executive needs to know that it has the backing of its board. I mean, you heard Kamala said it this morning, she's looking for Nigel because she feels good to know that he is there. And that helps to empower the CEO to do things. All right, when a CEO or an executive feels that they do not have the board's support, it really impacts the effectiveness of that executive. All right, so if it doesn't fall into any of these seven matters, most likely it is not for the board to treat with. Is it big? Is it about the future? Does it relate to the mission? Does it relate to a high-level policy decision? Is there a red flag? Is a watchdog watching? Or does the CEO need you to step in and support? Other than that, leave the matters for the executive to treat with. Let's look briefly on the other side, matters for the executives or operational matters, all right? Very high-level matters. To manage the organization in line with board direction. In line with board direction, all right? Executives cannot or should not, ought not to go outside of the board direction. The board sets the direction, the executive manages the organization within there, all right? Anything outside of that, you would have a runaway executive. If you do not set direction, then whatever the CEO or the executive does, then it's free game, all right? And you would have missed your opportunity to provide the direction. Keep the board educated and informed in a concise, contextual, and comparative matter. And I would add in here timely as well. All right, the board must always be educated and informed. Those are two separate things, all right? Because sometimes, again, board members come with their own value, their own backgrounds, which will not be exhaustive. So sometimes in order for them to be effective, in order for them to make a decision, they may have to be educated on a matter. It is the executive's responsibility to ensure that the board is aware and properly educated to treat with any matters before it. All right, and to ensure that the board is always informed, all right, in a concise, again, you do not want to be detailed. Detailed, a lot of details are not for the board. They want to be concise, you want to set the context, and you want it to be comparative. Comparative information, very, very useful information. You do not want your board making decisions within a vacuum. You know, when I was an executive, I'd always make it my business. You know, I feel protecting my board was a very critical component of my work. And so it was important for me to ensure that they knew what they needed to know and that they had the information that they needed to have in the right time and in the right way. All right. And that is the way your board will be effective, which would allow you to be effective as an executive. Seek the board's counsel. You don't ever leave your board out with certain key decisions, bounce ideas off of them. That is what they're there for. That will help with synchronization of thoughts and approaches. Seek the board's counsel. Make recommendations to the board supported by background information. All right, when you make recommendations, you must support and justify the recommendation that you are making. Again, this is to ensure that the board is protected and board members should not compromise on these things. These are things that the executives ought to be doing and you ought to require it of them. Otherwise, you will expose yourself when it is you make decisions because you will be making decisions within a vacuum. If it's questioned, there is no information. There are no documents. Justification went out the window, all right? And the minutes of the board meeting may or may not provide all the information that you need to go back and justify what may have been done. So it is important that is required of the executive to provide this kind of information. All right, be responsive to requests for additional information. The board may request additional information from time to time from the executive. You need to provide that information. And again, it's all in a bid for your board to be informed. An informed board will be an effective board. An educated board will be an effective board. All right? And you have to communicate with the board with candor and transparency, meaning that you have to be very honest and straightforward. Give it to the board as it is so that they are aware All right. And you have to be transparent. You don't hide things from your board. Okay. Especially things that fall within their purview. I'm not talking about over-reporting. I'm not talking about sharing all, pelting the entire book at them. Talking about the key things that fall within their domain. You ensure that they're aware of it and they're aware of it in time. All right. So there I would have just presented matters for the board, matters for the executive. All right. And those two areas need to be respected by the two entities. Very, very important. Understanding that now, what generally causes the difficulty between boards and executives? And I will tell you this. During this period of COVID-19, if there was an issue existing before, it will become worse. Because this situation will place pressure on everyone in an environment. And again, because I deal with leaders, leaders are the ones who generally take the hit. We're dealing with boards, we're dealing with senior executives. They are leaders of organizations and they are leaders in other spheres. They are the ones that will take the bounce. All right. And generally leadership is very, very stressful. In fact, at the start of next month, I'm doing a session on the mental health of leaders because leaders take a real bruising and they have to continue to be motivated and continue to, you know, to provide their teams with everything that they need, and nobody stops to ensure that the leader remains intact and can continue to function and be effective. All right. And in this environment, this season, it is going to be worse. All right. I'm sure this is how some of us feel sometimes when we have to deal with our boards or even deal with a difficult executive. Okay, remember a difficult board? While we could look at the board as being difficult, you know, I have had the experience, and you would see it bearing out in some of the research. If you have not chosen the right executive, the board would appear to be difficult because the board starts to struggle to get the organization to go in the way it wants it to go. All right? So you find the difficulty on both sides. So it's important as a board that you choose the right person, hold them accountable, and manage their performance. All right? The major cause of difficulties between boards and management is role confusion. That is the major cause, not the only cause, but it is the major cause. And, you know, the peculiarity about this, particularly if the board is the one that is confused, who is the one to bring the board back in line? You see, you can bring a CEO back in line. The board has the ambit to do that. But when it is the board is going off course, who brings the board back in line? If it's a state agency, you might still be able to call on the aligned ministry to come to your aid, perhaps. But in a private entity where the board is at the highest point and the board or the chairman of the board in particular, not clear on their roles, this makes for a very, very difficult situation. Another element of this is that the executive team, they are leaders in their own right. And you have to be cognizant of how to lead leaders. All right? If it is you lead a leader as you lead a non-leader, it can end up being offensive, it can end up being disrespectful, and it can end up being demotivating. Because the CEO and the senior executives, they have to lead an entire organization. So they are leaders in their own right. So issuing instructions and micromanagement just doesn't work. Especially when it comes to leading other leaders. And when I do sessions on leading other leaders, sometimes persons are very surprised to know how otherwise simple and regular run-of-the-mill approaches and postures that we know in the workplace become so stressful when applied to another leader. And sometimes it can even become catastrophic. All right, so it is important that we understand our roles, we respect the roles of each other, and we function within those roles. But let's look at some other causes of difficulty in a little more detail. Intrusion, it's a big one. See, when you have an intrusive board and a board that crosses the line over into management and micromanagement, this is a huge issue. And I think this is perhaps, you know, out of the role confusion, this is one of the things that come. This is one of the major byproducts, intrusion. Because sometimes, I can tell you this, you know, there's more than one way to skin a cat. But the board members, they are managers in their own spheres. They are managers in other organizations. They are CEOs in other organizations. And sometimes they come, and when they come into a board, they forget to switch hats and take off their executive hat that they function with during the day. And then they come to their board meeting in the evening or on a particular day of the month, and they still have on their executive hat when they're supposed to take it off and put on their board member's hat. All right? And function within the realm of governance. And because board members are sometimes very experienced, they know what it is to run an organization, or they've worked certain parts before. They are sometimes tempted to roll up their sleeves and get in there and do it themselves, or to direct, or to do it this particular way. And boards have to restrain themselves. Because if you get in there, it is going to start to carry things downhill. All right? This is what shows up most in relationships: intrusion by the board into the management's area. All right? And this can be remedied if boards allow themselves to receive the right information. And after receiving the right information, I think even receiving guidance and support, because I've recognized over time, while somebody may become aware, for it to translate into behavior change, it requires time, it requires closer guidance, and it requires closer support. All right, so being aware alone is not enough. It has to translate into the way that you operate. It has to translate into your governance style. It has to translate in the kinds of matters that you ask about and that make it into your agenda for your board. It has to translate into changed behavior. And what I generally tell executives that are also board members, operate on the board as how you would want your board to operate with you when you are an executive. Because when you sit in that CEO position, you know how it is you want your chairman to deal with you. You know how it is you want the board members to deal with you. And that is the kind of respect and place you want to give to the CEO when you now sit on a board. All right? So it's okay to be an executive in one space and on a board member in another space, but you have to switch those hats. Otherwise, you can cause challenges. Absent boards. That's another major cause of difficulty. And you know, there's some boards that can be virtually absent, silent on feedback. You know, it's like it goes into a dark hole. You send an email, no feedback, or you might have, you know, 9 board members, one alone provides feedback. What happens to the other 8? And that silence, that deafening silence, creates difficulty for the executive. All right, because the executive needs to know that you are there, you are with them, that you understand, that you raise concerns so that things are addressed when you are silent, when you are absent. And I heard one person said, you know, I was had another Zoom meeting and I was shooting with another consultant, and he said one of his clients, interestingly, when this whole thing started with COVID-19, they said the CEO disappeared. Nobody has heard the man for 2 weeks. They don't know where he went. And some people, and even though we're talking about boards, and the same thing happens for CEOs as well, but some people do not deal with certain types of stress very well. And they disappear on you. All right? Now, as a leader, you can't afford that. You cannot afford to disappear in a time of crisis. You have to be present, very much present, and you have to be heard because your team needs you. Your team needs to know that you are there. All right? So if this happens on a normal day, trust me, in the midst of this calamity, you will not hear them. All right? Absent boards, absent executives cause difficulty. Indecisiveness, it's another big one. When boards just take too long to make decisions, too long, or sometimes they delay the decision-making process by asking for more and more and more information. And sometimes what it is, they don't want to make the information the decision. Sometimes they want to say no. To me, it is better you just say no. Give your reasons for saying no, so that perhaps the executive can go back to the drawing board. But to delay the decision that indecisiveness sometimes slows the executive down from implementing certain key things that need to be treated with. All right, so this indecisiveness by boards creates a lot of difficulty. And I can tell you this, you see, particularly with absence and indecisiveness, a certain level of respect starts to be diminished by the executive towards the board. Because remember, to the executive, the board represents a leadership team. And so there is you look up to your board, all right? So when it is you are looking up to your board, and in time of crisis or in time of calamity, you disappear, or you refuse to make a decision, you could appear uninterested. You know, there is a lack of respect that starts to set in. So it's very, very dangerous. And then what happens, as time goes along, it starts to impact how the executive comes to you. It starts to impact how frequently they come to you. It starts to impact how the relationship starts to unfold, because you were absent or indecisive previously. Aimlessness, it's another one. And I have experienced this already, where the board member, the boards, they are there and there is no vision. They're just there, you know, and they were appointed or somebody selected them and they're just there, you know, and they offer nothing. They have no contribution. You know, if you're going up the road today, we go up. If you're going down the road tomorrow, we go down. They do not offer any guidance, any direction. And there is no interest in doing it either. All right. And the same holds true for executives, because I've seen executives also, no vision. There's no determination. There's no passion of what they want to see and where they want the organization to go. They're empty. All right. You cannot follow an empty leader. You cannot follow a leader that is going nowhere. All right, and when I deal with vision, I always tell persons visions have two parts. The first part of vision is to develop the vision. The second part of the vision is to communicate the vision. The power in a vision is in the communication of the vision. If nobody knows what you intend to do or where you see yourself or the organization going, there is no way that they can follow you. All right, and so it is important as the leadership team, whether it be the board or whether it be the executive, there must be vision. And I'm not talking about just the vision statement that is written down, talking about what you want to see, how you want things to be done. There must be a desire or a passion within you to see certain things. When that is absent, nobody will follow you. There's nowhere to go. There's nowhere to go. All right. And so it is critical that you do not only develop the vision, don't keep it in your head thereafter, communicate it, because therein it takes life when you communicate the vision. Ignorance. I don't know if you've ever had the experience of treating with a board that just doesn't know, doesn't have the information, or executive as well. Eh? These are two sides, because it happens on the other side as well, where a board just not knowledgeable about what the organization is about. And that particularly happens with, I see it with state boards, because sometimes there must be an onboarding process. All right. And sometimes board members don't go through that. They are appointed. Perhaps there was some value seen in them to contribute to the board. All right. And they get there and they do not take time to understand. They do not take time to know what the organization is about. And that way they can be what I call environmentally relevant. Because to come into an environment, not understand it, not appreciate it, there is no way you can be effective inside of it. You have to understand and appreciate that environment in order to be effective. So board members or executives that come into an environment, especially when they're new, and you do not take time to understand, you remain ignorant of what is happening, you will not be effective. You will not be able to make effective decisions, and you will then in turn cause difficulty. Ineffectiveness. And when I say ineffectiveness, I'm talking more about underperformance. Who addresses an underperforming board, especially in certain sectors? Who is the one to pull up the board to say, listen, we are not doing what we're supposed to be doing. We are not performing the way we ought to. Well, it must rest within the chairman to a certain extent. And then with the government entities, it must go to the government or line ministry or whatever other organ they have. But the board's performance and effectiveness must be measured and managed just like the executive. The board has to, even if it's hold itself accountable, to know if you're being effective. I mean, even board members, to ensure that all board members are being effective. All right, it doesn't make any sense having a board member that doesn't add value or being if adds effectiveness to the board. Very important, because when boards are underperforming, again, executives see it, they lose respect, difficulty sets in. All right, nobody follows an ineffective board. And disaccord, all right, not discord, but disaccord, where there is no unity between the board and the executive. When there's a major divergence, at least in philosophies, in approaches to the organization and in strategic areas, once there is that major divergence of how things should be done, there will always be a butting of heads and there will always be difficulties. So while role confusion sits as a major cause, a major root of difficulty, you have all of these branch areas, intrusion, intrusive board, an absent board, and again, also executives. You very rarely find an executive being intrusive into a board's area. Intrusion mainly goes from board into management areas. Indecisiveness, aimlessness, you must have a vision. Ignorance, you know, you don't want to not have the information you ought to have in order to be effective. And then underperformance, you know, you're just here for the ride. Underperforming, or, you know, ineffectiveness, it might even be an issue of capacity. Sometimes people just do not have the capacity to be a very strong board member to contribute in this environment. Remember, boards are specific to their organization. And while they are transferable skills and knowledge, some persons may be out of their element, or even an executive may be out of their element. They do not have the capacity. When it is a capacity issue, you need to have an exit plan. All right, you cannot treat with capacity. I mean, you could build capacity depending on what the capacity issue is. But if it's a major capacity issue, that is very difficult to deal with. If it's some of the softer skills, you can build those up. If it's some of the harder skills, technical knowledge, especially from the executive side, you know, that is going to be a challenge and disaccord when there's serious and major divergence of philosophies and approaches. All right, so the end of the day, the goal is synchronization, meeting of the minds, all right? Very, very important. Boards and management must find a way to synchronize their efforts, goals, and presentation, because there must be a united front, to all internal and external stakeholders. And with that united front, I mean, sometimes if it is you have to quarrel in the boardroom with the door shut, that's fine. But once you open that door, there must be a united front to certain stakeholders, the key stakeholders, very, very important. So you must find a way, that board executive team must find a way to synchronize. This is a little board executive diagram, where to the left, you have the board in that first diamond, as it were. And in the second, on the right-hand side, you have that other diamond, which is the executive team. And you have the board and the board chairman and the chief executive officer, which in themselves must have their own relationship and dynamics, which is that blue diamond there. So even though the board chairman belongs to the board and the CEO belongs to the executive, the chairman and the CEO must have a very strong relationship. All right, very, very important. This is how the relationship works, all right? So let's talk about how to improve synchronization. How do we improve this relationship that may be compromised, experiencing difficulty, or it might just be to enhance. You may already have a very good relationship and you want to deepen that relationship to make it work, to increase effectiveness. How do you improve synchronization? And let me just preface it by saying that it is a very difficult, delicate matter. This relationship is a very delicate one, and it requires commitment by both sides. Very, very important. And it also requires a non-judgmental approach. If the board already writes off the CEO as being incompetent, you're going to have difficulty in repairing that relationship, all right? So there must be openness for the relationship to develop and to grow, all right? So approach it non-judgmentally, because sometimes we take a position on a matter with without really understanding the whole of the matter. All right? So if it is you're committed to improving this relationship, do it from a non-judgmental standpoint. All right? So let's go through each one. Identify the major underlying cause of the dissonance. Very, very important. Because sometimes we can find ourselves treating symptoms and dealing with symptomology. And we know in order to be effective, you must treat with root causes. You cannot treat with just the symptoms. Otherwise, the root cause will just continue to spring up new things and new symptoms for you to treat with. All right, so identifying that root cause, that underlying factor. What is the real issue here? What is the issue? All right, and you don't deal with it from an area, from a standpoint of speculation and an assumption. You deal with it from an honest perspective, a tactful perspective, and sometimes it may even require a bit of vulnerability. All right, you know, find a private space. Bring up the uncomfortable conversation. Bring up the white elephant in the room to find out what is happening here. You have to respect the other person's position. Very, very important. Respect the other person's perspective, because we have a tendency to become defensive. If one person says, I do not like how you treat with me, the other person now jumps into defense mode. That is not the time to treat with it. We're going to get to treatment. What you are on, you are on a mission of identification. All right? You cannot be judging things as you are trying to identify. You know, consider it from an investigative standpoint. When you're investigating a matter, you need to be objective. You need to be thorough. And you need to be guided by the findings and the evidence. All right? It's not time for you to defend. It's not time for you to write off. Well, you know, it's only because it's me he's saying that. You don't want to do that. You want to take it for what it is, because you want to be able to understand what is the real issue. And even though I said evidence, it's not a court of law. So you don't want to say, if it's not in black and white, I'm not taking it on. Because when it comes to relational issues, it often would not find itself in black and white. You may see hints of it, but you will not see the issue itself. All right? But you want to know what is really going on, because if it is a personality clash, it is a real issue, it requires a real solution, even though it may not be documented as it would. All right? So for the first stage, you really want to determine what is the issue. Don't defend yourself at that point. It may hurt, you may feel upset. That's okay at that point. The issue is to objectively determine what is the root cause, Not the symptoms. We're not dealing with symptoms. We take Panadol all the time for all kinds of different things, and we don't know what is the issue. And by the time we get to the real issue, it's life-threatening. All right? So you want to attack and understand, firstly, what is the major underlying cause. Then once you understand what it is, after you have objectively determined that, then it is time to address it. All right? And you have to address it head-on. Now, head-on doesn't mean aggressively, yeah? Head-on means you offer a solution or a remedy that suits the cause. If I've broken my leg, I can't just take two Panadol and let me go and take a rest. All right? So when I say address it head-on, you are looking for a solution that directly treats with the underlying cause. If role confusion is the issue, recommending a mediation session will not help. Everybody will come out of the session feeling so happy and yes, I can relate to you, but nobody still knows what to do. All right, so you want to ensure when you are addressing the underlying cause, it targets very specifically what the cause is. All right, and sometimes it may require a third party, a neutral party, all right, who has no horses in the race. You know, it might be a separate consultant or it might be a line ministry or whomever. You may need to bring in a third party, but somebody who's professional, somebody who could be tactful, to be able to guide and navigate the situation. It may require training. It may require consultants. It may require all sorts of different things. But only when you have identified honestly and objectively what is the underlying cause, only then you can actually address it. You want to treat with relational discord. This is a big one, and This is the softer skills part that can have a very, very serious impact when people just cannot get along. You don't have to like each other. You don't have to be friends. That's fine. But there must be a measure of mutual respect and a level of professionalism in interacting with each other. Very, very important. All right? Because when it is you resort, you know, to imperfect, to unprofessional ways of treating with matters, becoming very toxic or very loud in your, because you're so incensed, you are going to find that communicating becomes difficult. All right? So any relational issue, treat with it, especially if it's between the board and the chairman and the CEO. You see, because if a particular board member has an issue, a strong chairman can manage that person. If a particular senior executive has an issue, a strong CEO can manage that person. But you see, when the chairman and the CEO cannot get along, managing that is very, very difficult. All right, so any relational issues, take a time out, go for lunch together, sit and talk. And if it comes that you need mediation and dispute resolution, even go to that point. Because in the end, it will help the organization. Because these two actors are very, very key. Ensure that all board members are fully engaged. very, very important. Because each board member has an individual as well as a collective fiduciary duty. All right? Board members cannot hide behind other board members. All right? Each board member has to contribute individually, all right, which then brings a collective contribution. And so sometimes, especially when they are new board members, there should be a time of orientation or onboarding, all right, where they are given the opportunity to learn and to know certain key things. And I will tell you this, never assume that a new board member knows how to function on a board. That is deceptive, though, that you deceive, it leads to difficulty. The person may be willing. The person may have the strengths to be a strong board member, but they may not have the tools to be effective. So sometimes it may even require corporate governance training. It may require certain key elements to entool the person, to equip the person to function effectively. And this is each board member, because remember, a chain is as strong as its weakest link. So you want to ensure that all the links are strong. And you want to ensure that each board member is fully empowered to offer their contribution and their vote in a particular manner. All right? Very, very, very important. All right? Ensure role clarity. And I know this could have been part of number two, addressing major underlying cause. Ensure role clarity. But because of its significance, I want to mention it again as a separate point. Do not assume role clarity. Don't assume because somebody is very experienced, they have role clarity, all right? Because understanding your roles is very different from accepting your roles, all right? There can be an understanding, but there can be no acceptance, you know, because sometimes persons cannot help but getting involved and cannot help but intervening. You have to accept that this is where your line stops. But I'll tell you this, because a board is not involved in operations doesn't mean it doesn't control what's happening. You know, they have their mechanisms of control, and that is what they ought to use and not resort to being an executive. All right? Because when a board leaves its seat to go and sit in the executive seat, who then is in the board seat? You know, and the board's function is critical. We, you know, the board needs to function. All right? And again, I always advocate, besides training, is support. Because support is where you will get behavior modification. Training just gives awareness. Training gives tools. And training is very effective. But you can often find people fall back into their norms, especially when they're going through a difficult period. Support helps you to navigate those tumultuous times to ensure that you remain on the right path. So persons generally are forged in a particular philosophy, and they are forged in a particular way of thinking, and that is what they would resort to, all right? And lastly, strategize in dealing with a difficult board chair. Ooh, all right? And I have to stick this in here. because you can deal with difficult board members by utilization of a board chair. When the difficulty rests within the board chair, then there is tremendous difficulty. Because who is the person to rein in the chairman of the board? You can rein in a rogue CEO. You can rein in a rogue board member. How do you rein in a board chair? All right, and there are some ways. It's not foolproof, but there are some ways. All right. Firstly, you can empower board members to make their votes count, because the board chair is still just one vote. So sometimes if the other board members can come together and vote in a particular fashion, in a particular manner, especially if they all agree that this is the way they ought to go, they do so, all right, collectively, because the board chair still only has one vote. But again, it is a very head-on kind of approach. And so you want to engage, all right? Somebody who's an influential board member, perhaps pull the chairman aside and have a conversation about what is happening and some of the side discussions that occur because of the way the chairman leads the board. And to inform the chairman firstly that this is the impact he or she is having on the board, on the executive, and on the organization as a whole. You know, I am a firm believer that persons do not intend to do poorly at what they're responsible for. I honestly believe that. Nobody intends to be dysfunctional, nobody intends to be toxic, nobody intends to be ineffective. What happens is that they end up being like that for one reason or the other. And sometimes if persons are given the tools or the way out to become more effective, they take it, all right? And so you want to remember that the board is the chairman, is the leader, just as everybody else is, but this is the leader of leaders. And so you want to be respectful in how you approach. You want to cover and protect the person as you approach them. You don't want to expose them and embarrass them. So you want them to feel safe so that they'll be more inclined to be receptive to your counsel and to your words of guidance. All right. You can even pass it through a subcommittee of the board, like, for example, a governance committee. It's a state board, again, you can engage the line ministry to assist in treating with a difficult chair. Also, again, the key is to get the chairman to agree to gaining new skills or treating with the issues, all right? And there's different ways to do it privately. There are different ways that you can attack the whole matter. But a board chair should take it upon themselves to ensure that they're effective, because an ineffective board chair is an ineffective board, full stop. Because as I always say, leadership is the single most influential factor in any environment. All right, so as I wrap up, just wanna touch a little bit on the next steps. Where do we go from here? Right, so start having the conversations. When you go back to your organization, start having the conversations with your board and your executives. Start talking about this board executive relationship and how it can be strengthened. Share the knowledge you've gained today. You know, start giving information. Bring awareness, because some people just sometimes are not aware. All right, encourage action. All right, after they've become aware, encourage persons to see greater awareness. If they need to have a session themselves, they can call CCGI. We want to know more about corporate governance or even my organization, even the ministries. There's so many places, there's so many professionals that are very strong in corporate governance that you can get the information that you need. But you want to encourage addressing the white elephant in the room. Do not turn a blind eye to it. The organization will suffer as a result. Engage external help where needed. And again, I spoke about that before. And you want to follow up to ensure movement. All right, so you may share information today. I mean, check in next month, check in again to see what's happening, because you want to ensure movement so that we all work to make our organizations, our boards and executives more effective. So thank you very much. And I've come to the end of my main presentation. So I will want to now turn it back
over to Nigel.
Yes. Yes, so that we can treat with some questions. I particularly did this session at this length so that there will be room for us to have this discussion and engagement after, because I know there may be some very specific questions, because this is a very delicate and could be a difficult area. All right, so thank you so much for giving me your attention. And yeah, let's go to the questions now. I'll stop sharing now.
Sophia, thank you very, very much. That was an excellent presentation.
You are so welcome.
We have one question here from Liz Cox. She says, how do you deal with a situation where it seems like only one director who would, there is only one director who would stand up and others just sit back and allow things to slide? Then she kind of answers her own question. She says, of course, one could walk away and this could be stressful. So how would you respond to that?
Yes, walking away is always
assuming that you don't want to.
Correct.
That, you don't walk want away to, is the last option.
Yeah, last resort. You see, again, and I spoke to engaging all the board members, and there's a reason why I said that, because many times what happens, one person to go in front, one person to fight the battle, when really the rest of them feel the same way, you know. But sometimes they may not feel that liberty or that strength within them to stand up for fear of consequences or whatever it may be. And sometimes it may be important for a side engagement to get an understanding of why they're not speaking. What is the issue? Why are you not exercising your vote? Why are you not exercising your position? Because while there is a collective responsibility by the board, there is individual responsibility by each board member. They have to give an account for their stewardship, for how they exercise their fiduciary responsibility. And so board members who stay quiet, I think many times are not fully aware of their responsibility and the consequence of not functioning the way they ought to. All right, so I think it's important that we raise awareness to those board members and then encourage them to exercise their vote. Mm-hmm. All right. They must, because leaving it to one board member will not work, because one vote is still one vote. You need the numbers.
The other question is that somebody said you did not touch on the role of the corporate secretary. What role does the corporate secretary play in reining in an out of control board?
You see, the corporate secretary has a critical role of, I think a major role is advising the board. Mm-hmm. Forming the board and advising the board. And so whomever is that person that informs or advises the board, yes, the corporate secretary can fit into that role. But again, the corporate secretary must have that respect and that air of the board, because sometimes, you know, board sideline corporate secretaries, which they ought to not. That is a major advisor to the board and they are major legal advisor to in a lot of cases. And so they would want to take the information and the advice of the corporate secretary, but sometimes the boards do not. So I think the role of the corporate secretary is educating the board and advising the board of its role and its responsibilities and checking them when it is they're going. Of course, they have to allow themselves to be guided by the corporate secretary. That's the key. Mm-hmm.
Right. If I may just add to that too, Nigel, we have had a few corporate secretaries call us at CCGI because a lot of what Sophia described here is the living reality in many organizations, mm-hmm. where there is this dysfunction between the board understanding its role and the management team understanding its role. And therefore, we have had corporate secretaries call us to do sessions with companies that would help in that.
No, I agree 100%. I have been very fortunate that I've had the pleasure of working with some really good corporate secretaries who have guided me and made sure I did not put my foot in it, as they say. But so I've been rather fortunate. One other person, Keith, asked, what's the role of culture, political and social, both political and social culture in dictating board/executive executive dynamics?
Yeah, culture is a fantastic and interesting area. You know the saying by Peter Drucker, culture eats strategy for breakfast. So culture is so critical. And culture shapes how the board sees itself. Culture shapes how the executive sees itself. And in fact, the culture of the culture that the board members and the chairman was forged in generally will be the culture that will pervade. So you have to be very careful of that culture. Now, the key really is that you want to form an organization culture, all right? You don't want to allow culture to haphazardly form, which is what a lot of people do. You want to take specific steps to guide and mold and shape your organizational culture. So you don't just replicate what you see before. So you find persons coming to an organization. Well, I came from organization, so and that's how we do it. So they come now and they force that mold onto this new organization and never give that organization an opportunity to develop its own culture. Now, let's look at national culture, because that's another thing that impacts. The way we even practice politics in Trinidad and Tobago will impact even how state boards are selected. That's a reality that we face. And I have had to interact with boards where persons were appointed and they didn't even know why they were there. They were just appointed and they were told to come, and so they came and they don't know what's happening. And so even the way other areas are practiced in the country impacts how boards are selected and then how boards function. So culture is very, very pervasive, far-reaching, all right? But as much as possible, the key is, to me, individually, that's the board members, individually the executives, must be willing to work together to forge an organizational culture. Not everybody's willing to do that, eh? But that's really what ought to take place.
Culture, all right. Culture. Yes. So we have a few more, and I'm going in order. Helen asked, how much detail, and I suppose this is an operational question, but I think it's important, how much detail should the minutes record in justifying a particular decision? I suppose where there is contention,
yes. And there's so many schools of thought on this. In fact, I've treated with various corporate texts. So secretaries, and they will have their own way that they feel minutes should be taken, which could be different from another one. All right, but generally the one that to me I've seen worked and worked pretty well is the recording of the decision and recording sufficient information that justifies the decision made. And again, look at it from the standpoint of somebody reading it who doesn't have the inside information, history and context that you had in at that point in time. So somebody who doesn't understand, wasn't in the boardroom, could read those minutes and get a pretty decent idea of the why behind the decision. And that's really what you need. All right. Sometimes they even attach, which they really should. They have the board papers, it might be in a separate file or whatever it is that came in support of the decision. If the decision was not what was presented but altered in some way, then that should be captured properly. It doesn't have to be verbatim. I think verbatim is a dangerous method to use for minutes, because people say all kinds of different things. You don't want it to be answered, but you want to ensure that there is sufficient details that somebody who wasn't there in the boardroom can understand clearly why a decision was made. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I think we have a very good question with the whole post-COVID situation, and I think more importantly, the ability to work remotely, because COVID may be the catalyst, but I think it's going to be a lot more, you're going to see a lot more remote meeting and remote working.
Right.
What are the implications for executive and boards in a remote working or a remote meeting environment?
Yeah, and I want to say that I don't know if you have recognized, but people are working far longer hours than now that they're working from home. It's quite interesting.
I recognize I'm one of them, so go ahead.
Yes, yeah, me myself. And being in front of this machine for very long hours is actually very draining as well.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you can pick up the phone or pop into somebody's office, you do not have that opportunity. But every time you want to jump on Zoom, while that may work, you also want to manage how frequently you do that and what you do. But you always want to remember you maintain a presence, All right. Need to know that you are there. You may not be physically there, but you are there otherwise, checking in. You're talking with, and you have your board meetings. Your board meetings still continue. You have them, if it's once a month, you have them. But in this season, I dare say, especially when the whole thing first happened, having a meeting once a month may not have been sufficient.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree.
More important, more frequently. And so you have to gauge the situation to determine how frequently you ought to meet. So you still need to meet, send out your board papers as usual, whether you have a board portal or whatever other mechanism you may use. And the usual thing pertains is just that you're doing it online. But again, you want to ensure that you maintain that presence, continue to function. All right. And again, the chairman and the CEO need to continue to have conversations, need to continue to meet. The CEO needs to continue to meet their team. So what would happen in a non-virtual setting needs to continue happening in the virtual setting. You need to be present. Now, as a board member, as a board, let's talk about COVID, the situation that's happening right now. It is a crisis, quote unquote. And a crisis, you know, when they talk about the Chinese word for crisis, they talk about danger and opportunity, right? Bringing it in. Crisis is, really depends on how you viewed it. I think, I can't remember what session I was a part of and I saw that was quite interesting. All right, it really depends on how you view it. But in that situation, because it is a major situation, the board must be involved. The board must provide direction, must give some kind of indication of how we want to weather this. What are the things we should do? And again, in a crisis, you cannot make decisions for the next 5 years, which is what the board would generally do. Right? The board now has to know how to flip what it was doing before, because you have to navigate sometimes day by day. Looking at what it is the government is going to announce again. Looking at, you know, and you have to kind of go like that. So the board has to remain toe-on-toe with the executive as new information comes available. You cannot make decisions based on hearsay. I had to tell one client one time, so because your sister in the hospital and she sent you a little video using that to make a decision for your entire organization, you cannot do that. That is not legitimate information. All right, so people have to be aware of not doing things like that, because crisis brings all kinds of anxieties and all kinds of different things that could cause people to overreact and do things that they ought not to do. They just want to remain, you want to remain calm, you want to have accurate information, and you want to be present, all right? And then be transparent, give information. It may even be good, I don't know if boards did it, but it might be good for a chairman to have a message going out to the staff, because persons want to know where their leader is and what they're saying in this time. All right. And once things start to smoothen back out, the board now can start to go back to whether it's once a month meetings or whatever it is. But they must be present initially during that major crisis period and then go back into its normal functioning. But you do not stop functioning. Everybody still has to be present at board meetings, still have to contribute. CEOs still have to produce all the information as before. It's just what it is. You have to continue functioning.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I agree.
Yeah, you have to continue functioning. Yeah.
There is another. I mean,
sorry.
I was in this situation. So the question is, what are your thoughts on the CEO being the managing director and being a part of the board?
Yeah, I actually was in that situation as well. It is a very interesting position, because you get the opportunity as the CEO to the managing director to be on the board, and you have a casting vote, but you represent operations.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, I've seen a situation where the CEO sits on the board, but as a non-voting member. And then I've seen it where the CEO sits on the board as a voting member. I don't know that I have a particular opinion on which one works or doesn't work, but I think the CEO being on the board, being part of the discussion, being part of what is happening, I think is critical, because that is made impacts operation, that is the operational head, that will give feedback right away into this discussion in terms of what will work, what will not work, and it must be infused into the discussion on what's happening. Whether they have a vote or they don't have a vote, I mean, I don't know that I have a position on that per se, but I think their presence on the board is critical.
Let me just ask this. Would you say that the CEO, whether he is a managing director or not, is an ex officio member of the board and should be treated as such?
I think so.
Yeah. Okay, Kamala, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that there are many mixed boards where you have members of your senior management team who are also directors. And therefore, what Sophia has shared here continues to be critical, because you need to know what is your function when you sit in which room.
Yes. Yes.
So it's very, very useful when you have executive directors, which are persons who are, in fact, members of your management team. But they need to know that in the board meeting, you know governance and you're providing oversight. And therefore, at this point, you are in a unique position to bring additional information to inform the board discussions. Yes. But at that point, you are governance, as opposed to when you are also in management, to know at this point, you are responsible for operations. Right. And you are no longer in governance. So that's just a little contribution I wanted to make.
And Richard also reminds us that there is a legal yes. liability as a board member. So let's not forget that.
Interestingly.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, interestingly, I go to say that when Kamala was finished, and then I saw Richard. Because there is, very correct. Very correct.
Yeah.
Now, I want us to also address this issue raised by Stephanie, which is a key question. Whose responsibility is it for ensuring that convening of AGMs, and what can be done for an organization when the AGM is not convened for several consecutive years?
Wow, that is it's not a good question. But all right. So the board has its responsibility, and the corporate secretary sits there as a watchdog and as this guide to the board. And really, that's supposed to be something that the corporate secretary is supposed to be flagging to the board that they need to get done. The executive, however, needs to ensure that all the information is there and ready and available to have the AGM. You can imagine having an AGM and you don't have any information to present, that should be a red flag in terms of performance of the executive. But really, I see it as within the board. I mean, and if the CEO, the corporate secretary is effective, she will be flagging constantly that this is something that needs to take place.
Right. Yeah. Another thing that I was just thinking too is that there are so many forms of organizations. Yes. You know, I think Elizabeth from Guyana mentioned the family-owned businesses and how mm-hmm. different that structure, that culture, and therefore the challenges would be.
Yes.
The same applies, let's say, even for membership organizations like ours. Yes. You know, the CCGI is a volunteer board, and it's an entirely different type of culture and arrangement than you would have in a private held organization. And we have so many NGOs, and you have directors who actually are on private boards and who also volunteer themselves on other NGOs and charitable bodies. And the way in which you will function in each of those really will be different depending on the structure, because some of them you don't have a corpsec.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you. I agree with you that the way it is practiced would be different, but the rules remain the same. But you just, in terms of, again, who is sitting where, sometimes impacts it. You know, and you have this peculiar arrangement sometimes, and I say peculiar just simply because it can be peculiar, of executive chairman, where the CEO and the chairman function sits in the same person. Mm-hmm. A lot in private entities. In state entities, it's not so much desirable. All right, so you have all of these different situations, and each organization has to be taken on its own, and sometimes the peculiarities within that environment has to be treated with.
I think Richard has just raised a good point, that the level of involvement, of course, could be situational based on risk assessment of what you're getting yourself into.
Yes.
So if you're walking into a situation where, leadership is absent, I think one of the first things that has to happen is that one has to change leadership and get the organization to a place where you can operate as a board as opposed to as the executive, but again, each situation has to be assessed.
Yeah.
There is another one by, this is an interesting one coming from Christopher, and I'm saying, Christopher, how do you deal with a board that is full of just quote unquote men and just agree with things because the chairman says yes? I don't know why he quoted men, but I think there are boards where the board is just, and I, in fact, in one of, in the way I operate is that I tell people I'm always mining for conflict. So I'm looking for the body language and that kind of stuff and making sure that you encourage, you encourage feedback, especially when that feedback is not in agreement with where you want to go or where the rest of the board wants to go. So,
but let me just share, Nigel, I think you are an unusual chair. I have sat on many boards and a lot of times you have this culture in the boardroom where the chair promotes the notion that board members are supposed to agree. So I think that's an excellent question. Sophia, how do you manage in a situation then where you sit in the boardroom and the chairman, you know, or the other board members are actually quite happy to just go along and say yes to whatever the chairman proposes?
Yeah. Interestingly, I've sat on boards that, what has been your experience as well as Nigel's own. So I've seen both in operation. And I think it goes back to an earlier question that was asked about other board members that just deliver to one board member to do something. Each board member must understand it. I mean, and some people, they prefer just to say yes because it's easier, quote unquote. All right. Yeah. But you have to, you know, board members have to go beyond that if it is the board that wants to be effective. I mean, there's research all over the world that says some of the most effective boards are the ones where there's a lot of exchanging of ideas, even disagreement, because there is a synergy that occurs. There is the best idea that rises to the top. And anyone that allows that kind of interaction will always end up leading an organization that is very effective. Boards and chairmen that do not allow that exchange, do not allow that that candid exchange, rob themselves.
Isn't it true that the chair is the presiding officer, but he has no more power? I mean, he's first among equals. Is that correct? And I mean, in any education, one has to make sure that the board knows that, but also that the membership knows that.
And that they're willing to act on it because, you know, they know it, but if the chairman continues to behave as if he has more power than they do, then they would accede to it.
Yeah.
Be willing to act on it also and challenge.
And of course, in some cases, the chair may have the casting vote.
Yes.
Point is that he still is only one vote. As opposed, if there is a break a tie or whatever, but the point is, I personally believe that you get the best decisions and the best results when you have good candid conversation.
Yes, and I have seen that, and that is also my position. And it should be encouraged. And chairman needs to be mature themselves to the point where they can encourage. And I have to use the word mature because sometimes I don't know what the issue is, and the issue may be different for different persons. But it is also a matter of maturity also.
Some chairman, and this is not, it could be both male or female, it's very difficult, but I'm using the word in not in the literal sense, but testosterone poisoning is a big problem.
So there's an excellent question that just came in from Kyle. And he asks, how much information should the CEO share with the board and board committees?
Well, you see, well, that question is you see, some things are situational, right? But generally, you want to give the board sufficient information to allow them to be effective in their decision making and also to apprise them of the progress as you are achieving certain strategic directives. All right, that is really where it's at. We want them to have sufficient information to make informed decisions. Now, I have been the CEO where a board may ask for, every single issue on every single detail under the sun. And let me tell you this, boards are exposing themselves when they ask for too much information, because you then cannot feign ignorance when certain things come up. You may be able to read it, you may be able to digest it, but the fact that you received it, it can be taken that you've read it. So you want to be careful about over asking for information, because you will set yourself up, you will expose yourself. You want information that you can digest, you want it in a form that is easily digestible and comprehensive but concise, so that you can be informed and make a good decision. Anything more than that? You letting the CEOs off the hook.
we are at 12:31, so I'm just highlighting that the discussion is going very, very well, and I think there was a lot of meat here, and it's interesting. Richard says with all these Zoom and Teams and Skype for business meetings, there is no longer lunch. So
nobody has lunch at all.
Which is unfortunate.
Yeah, I think his comment goes in line with something that Robbie shared as well. He said oftentimes board members are there for the title and pomp, and I would add and the lunch, because he has often seen members that don't have a clue what's happening in the boardroom. I've actually sat in board meetings, I have supported a board where I saw that, board members come and their first question is always what's for lunch? They will inquire what's going to be served for lunch, so that will determine whether they attend any board meeting. And you will ask for feedback on board papers, which will never come. And the chair will give a deadline that says by next week I want feedback, and it does not come. So there is a lot of evidence to support what Robbie's saying in terms of board members who come, and they have nothing to contribute.
I just want to add one thing. In terms of the asking for too much detail, another thing that it signals, a lack of trust.
Mm-hmm.
You do not trust the executive. You don't even trust your subcommittees, who may probably even treat with certain matters. And when there is a lack of trust, there is going to be a deterioration in relationship, because we need to found it on trust. And so both boards and executives have to be very careful on what they are doing and what they're asking for. And they have to be a little bit more strategic, like a chess game. So if you do this, this is one of the options. You need to know whether it falls in line with what you are trying to achieve. So when you ask for too much data, it also signals a lack of trust, which is one of the issues when you're leading leaders you don't want to do.
All right. In that regard, Richard had another question. Should you require that the videos be on in a board meeting?
No, I found it to be quite effective, because sometimes I can tell you what is happening. Sometimes not everybody likes that. But the truth is, when your video is off, you are in the background doing all kinds of things, and it's very easy for you to become distracted. And when it is you deal with board time, you want to be effective. You want to be efficient with your time. You don't want to stay there longer than you need to, and you want to be informed, and you don't want to stay long on this mechanism. All right, so when the video is on, you're kind of forced to be there and attentive, because everybody is seeing you. Mm-hmm. Not some people do not like that. So I think it has to do with managing a culture, but if it is you ask me, I think it would be more useful to have the video on.
Mm-hmm. All right.
That supports what you said earlier too, Sophia, in terms of the culture of the board and the body language, which also communicates, which is a point Nigel made. Yeah.
Kamla, I think, we've had a very good discussion. It was an hour and a half, right?
Yes, it was. And I'm very pleased. I'm happy with all the feedback we are getting online as well. And I see Richard just gave another suggestion. He said maybe the institute could consider some guidelines on board meetings via
video conference.
So let's discuss for next week. We'll talk about possibly continuing our discussion in terms of how do we really build effective boards. So we will be sending out information on that very soon. So thank you, everyone. Nigel, do you want to have some? In fact, let's hand over to Sophia first.
Sophia, you want closing remarks?
I just want to say thank you very much for the opportunity, and I want to encourage persons to take control of what it is they are responsible for, which may involve some personal and professional growth, and that is okay. You see, not knowing or not having the tools is okay. Continuing to not know and not have the tools when you know you don't have them is not okay. So I want to encourage persons to grow, get the tools that they need. Every new environment, every new organization requires new learning. It is fine. It doesn't mean that you're incompetent. It doesn't mean anything is wrong. You just want to be effective. All right? So thank you very much, guys, for the opportunity, and thank you for being a tremendous audience.
Well, I want to thank you for a very thought-provoking, very informative conversation. I think our participants will have learned and will continue to grow as a result. And this is very important. So again, thank you, thank you, thank you.
You're so welcome.
Kamla?
Yes. Thank you all very much. Sophia, you did not disappoint at all. I think this is such an important area. You know, how do we build effective boards? It requires so much. And leadership, as you have pointed out time and again, is key. And leadership at different levels. So I'm glad we were able to first deal with that today. But we need to continue this discussion because it is really going to help us in our mandate to help ensure that we improve on corporate governance practices.
Yes.
So
Just one point, Kamla. The presentation is going to be shared with the audience, right?
If you wanted, I can send it to Kamla. So you can send
Thank
it
you. Up. Thank you very much. People have been asking.
No problem at all.
Okay, great. So just to remind persons, this session is being recorded. They will get a link to the recording itself. And as Sophia has promised, we could get the PowerPoint as well, which we will share when we send out the recording. Okay, now remember, it will come to the email to which you registered with us today. So look for it there, because we will not necessarily go through, forgive me, and I'm saying this specifically for Colleen, who just gave us her email address there as well, right? If you wanted sent an email address other than what you registered here, please email us at info@caribbeangovernance.org. Very easy. Come to our website, you'll get it, info@caribbeangovernance.org. So you could request the link, and of course, you could find the links to all of our previous sessions. We've had many of them over these last 2 months as we have been helping boards to build competence and respond in an environment that really has been difficult for us, because we can't even tell how the environment changes day to day. Okay, so thank you all very, very much. I truly appreciate everyone who took the time to come here. Thank you those who gave me feedback earlier as well. I would appreciate if anyone is willing to email or text or message us in any way. Tell us the timelines if it works for you, because we are looking to make sure that we are providing the service at the time that works best for you. And one final thing, I mentioned before the start of our session today, for those who were on early, Governance Week is coming up. It's going to be from the 28th of June to the 4th of July. A lot of exciting things, including the modules, which is the training for our certificate in corporate governance. It will all be offered online, so you'd be able to register from the comfort of wherever you are located in the region to be part of the training that we're offering here for Governance Week. All right, so that's it. We are just 10 minutes past our allotted time. Thank you, those of you who stayed with us. I really appreciate all of you. I appreciate the session, and we look forward to you coming back to us again next week, Wednesday, from 11. Okay? Bye, everyone.
All right. Bye, guys.